This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague and friend, Thaddeus McCutter, recovering politician, writing in American Greatness, writing a column about the October surprise and how old-fashioned of you to think of the October surprise. Thaddeus calls it an antique. Thaddeus, a very good evening to you. If it's an antique, do we need an October surprise? What have we got instead? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, I said antiquated, but I see... I really can't quibble with you. In the final analysis, we're looking at elections are getting longer and longer. The voting is getting longer. The messaging is getting longer. The amount of money is getting increased exponentially. It becomes a case of almost a permanent campaign to a certain extent, which is kind of where we're heading in the age of social media, the communications revolution. And so in the past, as you and I both well know, an October surprise was something that happened like at the last 48 hours, the last weekend before the Tuesday general election. And it was done to basically destroy any momentum and devastate your opponent to the point where you could win and sneak past that this new information was so unsettling to voters that your side would exponentially gain heading into the voting on Tuesday. Well, with mail-in voting, early voting, and other such changes, the idea of a last-second attack is really, again, antiquated. So the reason that I said an October surprise from Donald Trump, tongue-in-cheek a bit, was to do the one thing that nobody has ever done in an October surprise, which was put forward a positive message as opposed to a negative one. And especially coming from someone who has been much maligned as a negative individual, to have it come from Donald Trump would actually be, I would think, very surprising to the Democrats and very welcome by the electorate. And he has actually, John, started to incorporate some elements of a very positive message in some of his more recent campaign ads, talking about uniting the country, representing all the people, and everybody coming together to bring America back. And I think it's kind of worked, actually.
On the Joe Rogan, what I saw, I mean, it went on for hours. I could only see clips of it. Mm-hmm. There was something of the Al Smith Donald Trump. He was cheerful and jovial and enjoyed being an entertainer.
A happy warrior of Al Smith, yes. So what you're seeing, John, is Donald Trump is, to a certain extent, trailblazing in this capacity. Now, I think other candidates have done this before. I think Barack Obama had done what was now known as an influencers channel, I think, on the YouTube or the internet. He may have been the first. But for candidates like Donald Trump, especially as Republicans, what he's shown them is you don't necessarily have to rely on the corporate legacy collusion media who loathes Republicans, who loathes the right. If you can go to a podcaster like Joe Rogan and have a conversation with him that covers the span of an hour, that does two things. One, it allows you to escape the strictures of the corporate media. But more importantly, it allows voters to listen at their leisure to you. And if you can keep up with someone like Joe Rogan, at least verbally and in the ability to communicate a message and to articulate that message, I think it redounds to your benefit. A lot of people think of the politicians now as 30-second soundbiters, bumper sticker, human bumper stickers. And it really starts to annoy people with platitudes and cliches and the trite nature of the 30-second campaign. And yet when you sit with somebody like Rogan, whose fans appreciate his ability to interview people, they also appreciate the politician's ability to articulate responses that they can then evaluate. In short, it shows a respect for the intellect of the audience. So I would think that somebody like Donald Trump, who is much more relaxed in that type of setting than, say, he is in a formal debate hosted by one of the networks, I think it very much avails to his advantage. And for other Republicans down the road, it will avail to their advantage as well, especially if that interviewer is seen as a nonpartisan or not particularly partisan. I think it will help.
About the interviewers, the networks and the major newspapers, they're under some strain to produce news. Is that a contributor to the hostility of those interviews, no matter who it is?
No, I think they're center left at best. And I think that what's the old joke? Who was the New York Times film critic that said that she voted for McGovern and all her friends voted for McGovern? So how could it be a Nixon landslide?
Pauline Kael at the New Yorker.
Right. So that's their milieu. Again, as you and I have discussed, John, my belief is that a leftist only knows what they're told and they only talk to each other. So for the media, everybody they know, it's a question of their peers despise Republicans, despise Donald Trump. And if they look as if they're going soft on Republicans, i.e., trying to be objective, they will be ostracized within their community and there will be professional repercussions. And we saw that with the Donald Trump debate as well as with the J.D. Vance debate.
So it's better to use a medium where there is no political advantage one way or the other. It's about human
Well,
interest.
it's better, but sometimes you have to, I would argue, you have to judge each and every opportunity to message with the form in which you plan to do it. And it's up to every candidate, be it Republican, Democrat, Independent, Green Party, Libertarian, whatever, to make those calculations and determination. But I do not think that as we continue to go, that you're going to necessarily be compelled to have to or be coerced into going to a corporate legacy collusion media forum in the future. You may have to do a debate, but look, Donald Trump's done one debate. Vance and Walz have done one debate. And I don't hear the rest of the country clamoring for another one, do you?
Nope. Quickly, that is. There is a report that Mr. Trump has said that he will entertain, if president-elect or president, pardoning Hunter Biden. Is that a step towards what you're talking about?
A step towards what?
Accommodation as opposed to confrontation.
Well, I'm not talking about accommodation or confrontation in regards as to what he does when he's elected. I'm just talking that they're finding alternative ways to message during the campaign.
I understand, but there is a moment where you want to detox, and that charm can do it, but actions can do it as well.
He's not in a position to do any action because he's not elected right now. Those would be questions for after the fact, or those would be questions as to what types of policies he wants to put forward to the electorate. So that would be up to them to make those determinations. I don't know whether those discussions or determinations have even happened, and certainly he's not in a position to implement.
Well, but there is the report, so it's happened before the election.
Well, I don't. As we've seen with reports, I remember back in 2016, it was also reported to be a Russian asset. I don't put much faith in the collusion media reports. We'll have to wait and see. And if he wants to articulate a message, I'll let the man speak for himself.
That is McCotter writing an American greatness about antiquated October surprise. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.